Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, May 14th, 2021. Today, as we do every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me with his editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So we are coming off a remarkable 2020 for publishers, with overall trade sales up about 8%, despite and perhaps because of the COVID-19 crisis. And 2021 looks like another strong year. This week, the last of the big five publishers reported first quarter sales figures.
Yeah, so as of the first week of May, we have the quarterly results for the first quarter of 2021 from the nation's largest trade publishers. And my boss, PW Editorial Director Jim Milliot, reported on those figures this week for PW. And as you say, the numbers show that the sales momentum that had built up through the last year has carried over into 2021. Now, the comparisons look a lot better for 2021 over 2020 because the first quarter of this year includes March sales, and March sales of 2021, while strong on their own, look even better when compared to March of last year, which is, of course, when the pandemic hit and the lockdowns first went into effect and bookstores closed and people were not able to go out and about shopping. Our listeners will recall that the first few weeks of the pandemic last year, sales for publishers started to dip, but they made a turnaround about May or so. And well, we just never looked back.
And indeed, let's talk about how each of the majors is doing so far in 2021. For two publishers, this is likely the last time they will ever report sales figures.
Very good point. So, HarperCollins this week completed its acquisition of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt's trade division. Houghton Mifflin, of course, is the sixth largest publisher in the country. They aren't quite a big five. They're sort of a mini major, we call them, but they are now being acquired by HarperCollins. And of course, Penguin Random House is hoping to finish its acquisition of Simon & Schuster sometime this year. That could be a little more complicated, though frankly, I think it's going to be approved and we won't see any issues there. But we'll start with Houghton Mifflin and HarperCollins. Acquisition aside, both publishers saw really solid performances in the first quarter. Houghton Mifflin saw a 12% jump in the first quarter of 2021 over the same period last year, and its pre-tax loss was cut dramatically. Understandably, Houghton Mifflin officials had nothing to say about the trade division, which has now been sold and was just days away from being under new ownership. And for its part, that new management at HarperCollins also had a strong quarter. HarperCollins saw its 2021 profits jump 45% with a 19% increase in revenue compared to the first 3 months of 2020. News Corp, of course, that's the parent company of HarperCollins. News Corp officials said that the sales increase was driven by solid gains in the general trade and the children's division in the U.S. and increases in the U.K. And, one of the reasons why I think the Harcourt acquisition was such a shrewd move for HarperCollins, HarperCollins News Corp officials acknowledged that backlist was a big driver of the gains for HarperCollins, accounting for 62% of sales in the quarter. And, why I think it was a good move to buy Harcourt is because Harcourt has a lot of classics and a really strong backlist. And for my money, HarperCollins is, as that 62% number would indicate, incredibly good at marketing and selling its backlist books. Also worth noting, Harper's digital sales were up 38% in the quarter. Ebook sales, that's excluding digital audio, just ebook sales were up 38% too. Audiobooks were up, like, I think 42%, another one. Now, this is a stunning turnaround for ebooks, especially when you consider previous years. Ebooks had been in decline prior to the pandemic, and no doubt it's, had some effect on the company's jump in profits as well, because digital is significantly more profitable than traditional sales, at least for the publisher. I'll note that many authors actually do not fare quite as well with the industry standard digital royalty terms. But for the publisher, ebooks are much more profitable.
And two other houses are poised to merge, Andrew, Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster. How is the year for them so far?
So very brief reports here. Neither Bertelsmann nor Viacom CBS had much to offer, at least not in terms of news about the purchase of Simon & Schuster or when that may be completed. But both publishers are having strong years and a very brief financial update, Bertelsmann, which is the parent company of Penguin Random House, said that the PRH was one of its divisions to post, and I'll quote here, double-digit organic growth in the first quarter over the same period in 2020. So you can take from that that Penguin Random House had double-digit sales increases, and that's organic, independent of any acquisition, just selling more books. And Simon & Schuster is now actually classified as a discontinued operation after the sale by parent company Viacom CBS. But for a discontinued company, it's doing quite well. It saw its sales increase a healthy 8.8% over the first quarter of 2020. CEO Jonathan Karp said, and again, I'll make note of this, digital sales were up significantly, actually just 8%, but that's a significant rise in the quarter, while print books also had a healthy increase. The digital increase for Simon & Schuster was actually driven by audio, which remains strong at Simon & Schuster and is only likely to get stronger as the year goes on and we start to get back to a more normal post-pandemic life and more people start getting back to their commutes. As for the remaining publishers, well, the majors, well, Macmillan, of course, is a private company, so we don't have reports from them. And when the Simon & Schuster acquisition is completed, Hachette Book Group will then become the third largest trade publisher in the U.S. It'll jump up a spot, although a very distant third. But nevertheless, it was a strong quarter for Hachette. They were up 9.1% in the first quarter over last year. Hachette Book Group CEO Michael Peach said the increase was driven by print sales, really strong hardcover sales. And he also added that Hachette's distribution business had posted double-digit gains. And that, to me, suggests that the strong sales we're seeing at the majors are also doing pretty well for indie publishers as well.
And there's a lot of optimism these days out there to go with all the vaccines that are available. Is that optimism in publishing shared among those who do the forecasting of sales?
So not a lot of predictions about going forward for the rest of the year. And what we did hear from CEOs of the big publishers was cautious optimism, I'd say. I think it's fair to say that people think that we're going to have a good year this year. Maybe they don't want to jinx it. On the plus side, the economy is reopening, right? You mentioned vaccines. That's certainly having an effect. And consumers now are going to find that they have more ways to spend their time and money besides, you know, staying home and reading. So a couple of executives, you know, voiced a little bit of concern about that. Still, they all noted that industry trends are favorable and the economy is showing real strength, and that always bodes well for the publishing industry. Again, at the same time, more people are going to be going back to offices and full-time jobs, which, you know, could mean less time for book breaks. But publishers say they're going to monitor closely the sustainability of recent consumer spending patterns. And what I'm really curious to see in the coming months is whether the increase in sales that we've seen for publishers over the last year is actually these so-called power readers, the really big readers who have been buying more books during the pandemic, or whether the publishers have actually found new readers, that we've been minting new book buyers, or, you know, gotten people who had maybe gotten away from reading to return to books during the lockdowns. So I think that's going to be key. Now, studies suggest that over the last decade, new reader levels have not really been growing. So it would be a huge boost if we saw that that trend actually was reversed. But to sustain new readers, publishers are going to have to find a way, I think, to make that more economically attractive. In other words, I think it may be time, if we want to keep these gains that we've made in the last year, to rethink some things and maybe experiment a little, and whether that's pricing or, you know, maybe participating in some form of subscription access or, you know, working with libraries. I'm not sure. But there's going to have to be, I think, to keep the readers that we made in 2020, I think publishers are going to have to open it up a little bit.
And as you say, Andrew, HarperCollins has now formally completed its acquisition of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt Tradeside. What comes next for the combined organization?
Yeah, so I think we were expecting this to take a little longer. But as noted, HarperCollins, the second largest trade publisher in the U.S., completed its acquisition of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt's trade division this week for $349 million. In a letter to employees this week, Harper CEO Brian Murray acknowledged that many decisions are going to need to be made over the coming months surrounding the acquisition, and he outlined a temporary organizational chart. But as for what the future holds, well, as with all acquisitions like this, there's going to be efficiencies to be found and redundancies to be eliminated. So I guess let me be a little bit more direct here. Unfortunately, some people are probably going to lose their jobs. You know, we don't know exactly how many, but we know that that's probably going to happen. And I think with this acquisition, it may even be more notable because my read is that HarperCollins was really much more interested in the backlist of Harcourt than what they were acquiring on the front list. And because of the pandemic, well, what happens with the facilities and things like headcounts is already way up in the air. Imagine being bought during a period like this with the pandemic and not really being able to be in the office to sort of remind key people just who you are and why you're important to the organization. I think that's going to be, you know, pretty challenging. So, of course, let the rumors begin also as to what the swift approval of this deal by regulators might mean for the main event, at least in terms of regulatory approval. And that, of course, is Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster.
Well, that's a good question you raise, Andrew. What are you expecting on that point? Will the government throw up any roadblocks?
My take on that remains pretty much unchanged, and it's always been that Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster is going to be approved, and probably rather swiftly. You know, for all the outrage and opposition we've heard in recent months about the Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster merger, I don't think that there is a heck of a lot of history there to suggest that regulators are going to stop this kind of consolidation. And I say that because in 2012, Penguin and Random House, that deal sailed through pretty easily. And it has to be said that Penguin Random House has a very good team, a very efficient team in place to see that this deal is on the same sort of glide path. I'll note, too, that consumer prices for books have remained stable, though opponents of this deal talk about the impact on authors. And that's a real problem, I think. But I think it's also hard to make the case to regulators, the case about authors' payouts, especially when you have an Amazon in the game here. Now, there are a few wild cards, of course. It doesn't help that the publishers are being sued for price fixing by a consumer class action firm. But at the same time, it remains to be seen how that action is going to move forward. And frankly, that litigation is really about Amazon's power. The publishers may be listed as co-conspirators in that antitrust case filed by a consumer class action firm, but it's really Amazon's power to force terms on the publishers that is at play in that case, which in some respects could even help make the case for publisher consolidation as a way to sort of blunt Amazon's power. Now, that doesn't mean that consolidation is a good thing, and there has been a lot of it, and there are a lot of opponents of it. But what I am saying is that this Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster deal, it just strikes me as that it would be a strange place to start drawing the antitrust line now. And if the line is drawn there, well, you would expect a host of other actions would have to follow. And given that all that's going on in the nation right now, I just don't think the DOJ is going to take up that fight right now. So my take is that the swift approval that came for HarperCollins and Houghton Mifflin, much smaller deal, but similar to two of the biggest six publishers in the nation, to me, that suggests that Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster are going to be okay too. But we'll have to see. And I've spoken to lawyers over the last few months about this. They've all said it's 50-50, but that's just a fancy way of saying it might get approved or it might not. But we should have a better idea soon of how that's going. And I expect we'll hear something sometime over the summer.
And finally, Andrew, big news for the U.S. Book Show. The New York Times reports that Oprah Winfrey will participate, adding another big name to the roster.
Yeah, more big names for the U.S. Book Show. The show's doing extraordinarily well. Oprah Winfrey, Keanu Reeves were announced this week. There was a great article in the New York Times about it. I think we've got a really good program. There's an outstanding library program that I'll be hosting on May 25th. Tickets are available and reasonable, and I hope that you'll be able to join us.
And you have my Senator, Elizabeth Warren, who has a new book out as well, joining you.
Indeed. Senator Warren will be there. She'll be discussing her new children's book, and she may have a few other things to say as well.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, these readers buy, subscribe, and borrow books at higher rates than the general population. They also engage at higher rates in fan fiction and discover new authors across multiple media, including streaming film and television. These readers are also pirates. Rachel Norda is director of the Book Publishing Graduate Program and assistant publisher in English at Portland State University. She is co-author of Immersive Media and Books, looking at how reading and entertainment behaviors vary among American demographic groups, including race, gender, and age. Professor Norda explains how exposure leads to expenditure.
In the publishing industry, book piracy has often been seen as this binary categorization. You're a book pirate or you're not, and there's a hefty moral judgment that comes along with that. But book pirates have multidimensional identities. And so not only are they book pirates, but they are also readers. They are book customers.
Pirates are readers too. Next on this CCC podcast, our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.